Welcome to Luma Digest. I'm Noura. It's Thursday, the 7th of May. Okay, so this morning's headline is Postman's decline mirrors a larger tooling crisis. And honestly, this one hits close to home because I think we have all been here. You find a tool you love, it does exactly what you need, and then it changes. Not in a good way. Let me start with what happened to Postman because it is the clearest example of a pattern that is now everywhere. Postman used to be the go-to API client. Simple, local, free. You could test APIs, save collections, share them with your team, all without needing an account or sending anything to the cloud. Then they got acquired. Then they raised venture capital. And then, piece by piece, they started removing the features that made developers choose them in the first place. Offline mode, gone. Local collections, now they require cloud sync. Want to share with your team? That is per seat pricing. For a lot of teams, especially in regulated industries like fintech or healthcare, mandatory cloud storage is not just annoying, it is a compliance blocker. You cannot store API credentials on a vendor's server when you are handling patient data or financial transactions. And here is the brutal bit. Three people at $19 a month each is $684 per year for a tool that used to be free. That is not a small line item for a startup or a small dev team. But Postman is not alone. Thunder client paywalled Git integration. Insomnia required login for local files. The pattern is identical. Build a generous free tier to get adoption, then lock features behind paid plans once you have market share. Now, I know what you are thinking. These are businesses. They need to make money. Absolutely. No argument there. But the issue is not that they want revenue. The issue is how they are getting it. They are making money by removing the features that made developers trust them in the first place. Think about that for a second. The practical outcome is exactly what you would expect. Developers are migrating, some are moving to local-first alternatives, some are building their own tools. Because once trust is gone, the switching cost suddenly feels worth it. But there is a deeper structural problem here, and this is the bit I keep coming back to. When a tool gets acquired or raises venture capital, the incentive structure flips. Growth investors do not want a stable utility that people love and never upgrade. They want a platform, expanding features, expanding pricing tiers, expanding margins. The local-first, offline-capable, Git-friendly API client? That is not the business they funded. So the tool you loved becomes the tool you tolerate and eventually the tool you replace. What is being built instead is interesting though, because while API clients are degrading, something else is growing fast. MCP, the Model Context Protocol, crossed 110 million monthly SDK downloads this week. 10,000 community implementations. Now, MCP solves a different problem than API clients. It defines how AI agents talk to tools, but the architecture underneath is the same philosophy that made early Postman great, local first, open, and designed to be owned by the people using it. There is a new framework called Synapse that sits on top of MCP and handles schema translation between different specialist models, so you can have one agent using a vision model, another using a reasoning model, and Synapse handles the handoff without you writing custom glue code. That is the kind of thing that gets built when the incentive is utility, not extraction. The takeaway? If you are building on someone else's API, you are building on someone else's schedule. And if that API is tied to a tool with venture backing and aggressive growth targets, you are probably building on borrowed time. Worth thinking about for your own stack. Right, completely different corner of the tech world now, but this one properly surprised me. MIT Economist just published a study that flips the automation narrative on its head. The common story is that companies automate to boost productivity. Makes sense, right? Replace slow manual processes with fast automated ones, output goes up, everyone wins. Except that is not what the data shows. Since 1980, companies have been targeting automation at workers earning above market wages. Not the least productive workers, not the most repetitive tasks, the highest paid workers. The goal was not productivity, it was wage control. And here is the kicker. Automation accounts for 52% of income inequality growth over the past 40 years. That is more than half. And productivity? It has been suppressed. The study estimates that automation has offset 60 to 90% of potential productivity gains. So we automated and got more inequality and less productivity. Now, I was not expecting that. I thought the trade-off was jobs for efficiency. But if efficiency is not even the outcome, then what are we doing? The study does not say automation is bad. It says the way we have been automating is bad. We have been optimizing for cost reduction instead of augmentation. We have been replacing expensive workers instead of making all workers more capable. And that matters because the next wave of automation is AI. If we follow the same pattern, automate to cut costs, not to expand capability, we are going to get the same result. more inequality, stagnant productivity, and a lot of very angry people. Something to think about as AI tools get cheaper and more capable. The question is not, can we automate? The question is, what are we automating for? Ask yourself that before you deploy the next agent. Now, this next one is dense, but if you are working with large language models, it is worth your time. A new paper called LCM, Lossless Context Management, introduces a deterministic architecture for LLM memory that outperforms Claude Code on long context tasks. Here is the problem it solves. Current LLMs handle long context with attention mechanisms, but attention does not scale well. The more tokens you feed in, the more the model struggles to keep track of what matters. You end up with diluted attention and dropped details. LCM takes a different approach. Instead of trying to attend to everything, it uses recursive context compression and task partitioning. Basically, it chunks the problem, compresses each chunk losslessly, and only loads what is needed for the current task. The result? Better performance on long context evaluation benchmarks than Claude Code, which is currently one of the best long context models out there. Now, this is not production ready yet. It is a research paper, but the approach is interesting because it is deterministic. You know exactly what context the model has access to at any given time. No black box attention waiting, no mysterious hallucinations because the model lost track of something 3,000 tokens ago. If you are building agents that need to work with large code bases, long documents, or multi-step reasoning chains, this is the kind of architecture that might actually solve the reliability problem. Keep an eye on this one. Okay, last one for today, and this is the big structural story that ties everything together. Five architects of the AI economy sat down at the Milken Global Conference this week and talked about where the wheels are coming off: chip shortages, orbital data centers, and the growing concern that fundamental AI architecture might be flawed. The chip shortage is real. ASML has a monopoly on EUV lithography machines. They make the machines that make the chips, and they cannot scale fast enough to meet demand. There is a waitlist, a literal queue of companies waiting for the machines that let them build the chips that let them train the models. That is a bottleneck, and it is not going away anytime soon. Then there is energy. Training large models requires data centers. Data centers require power. And we are running out of grid capacity in the places where these centers are being built. Hence, orbital data centers. Seriously, put the data center in space where there is infinite solar power and no cooling costs. It sounds like science fiction, but it is being actively researched. And then there is the architectural concern. What if the transformer architecture we have been scaling for the past 5 years is not the right foundation? What if we have hit the limits of what attention mechanisms can do and we need a fundamentally different approach? That is the question nobody wants to ask out loud, because if the answer is yes, a lot of investment is suddenly pointed in the wrong direction. But the fact that it is being discussed at industry conferences tells you something. The people building the infrastructure are not sure the foundation is solid. So, stepping back from all of that, here is what I keep coming back to. We are in a moment where the tools we rely on are being redesigned around business models instead of user needs. The infrastructure we are building on has structural bottlenecks, and the architecture we are scaling might not be the end game. That does not mean stop building. It means build with your eyes open. Own your tools where you can. Understand your dependencies, and do not assume that because something is working now, it will keep working the same way tomorrow. Something to think about on the commute home. That is it for now. Thanks for listening. Links in the show notes.